Illinois Municipal League Executive Director and former Carbondale Mayor Brad Cole joining us this morning. Brad, first off, morning and happy Monday to you. There's such a
good
thing.
Morning. Good morning, happy Tom. Monday. And been listening to your show this morning. Good morning to my old pal Murph.
Yeah. Murph's hanging out around here somewhere right now. I can hear him in the hallway as we speak. Hey, somebody texted me this question just after I mentioned that you were going to be joining us on the show, asking about the Illinois Municipal League stance on progressive tax.
The Municipal League has not taken a position on the tax proposal. There was discussion early on with the governor's office about it, but you know, the biggest issue we have as Illinois municipalities is that local share of the state income tax. We've seen that number dwindle. We call it LGDF, the Local Government Distributive Fund. That issue is not being addressed in any of the proposals that we've seen regarding this tax referendum question, and so the Illinois Municipal League has not taken a position. In fact, our position is essentially no position.
All right. Last Thursday at 7:20, I was speaking with Senator Dick Durbin. I have been, maybe the proper term is, harping, and I just am not going to let this go. These CURE funds, they're from the CARE legislation, CURE funds. They are designated to help municipalities and counties. You heard the interview. There were a number of items there. I mean, for instance, Pulaski County applied for $45,000, but they're eligible for $125,904 because these restrictions the state has placed on it that weren't placed on federal money, weren't placed on Chicago. And, you know, when you start to see this, I'm increasingly concerned this money has been allocated, but communities are never going to see it.
And that is exactly our point. As you know, we've talked about this. The Illinois Municipal League raised this issue on March 26th, the day it was passed by the Congress, the day before it was even signed by the president. We raised these issues and about how the funds were going to be distributed and the fact that they needed to be distributed fairly and quickly. And since that day, March 26th, till now, there has been no money distributed. The state has set up all these additional procedures and restrictions. We fought them on a reduction in the time. They wanted to reduce the amount of time that municipalities and counties had to be able to receive the funds. We were able to successfully fight that back a little bit. But, you know, here we are, the end or middle of September, and these communities have had expenses. They've lost revenues. They need to know how to access and utilize these funds, and they're not able to. I want to make one specific point, though. The federal law allows the use of these funds under a half a dozen different guidelines. One of those is not to plug a budget hole for lost revenue. So that's something we have to address at the congressional level, and we've been trying to get that changed in any future funding plan. However, in what the guidelines were that the federal government released, the state has restricted that, and that's where our problem is. So communities are not able to use the money for local economic support when that's what is needed most.
And many communities just shaking up their hands, putting up their hands, going, we're not going to worry about it because we wouldn't be able to get it, wouldn't be able to use it anyway. And then you've got others saying, we would complain, and I've had these people speak to me directly, we would complain, but we're worried that if we did complain, that any other dollars that we would get would be taken, for whether it's water plant or sidewalks or whatever state funds, that there would be a punitive action taken about them if they did complain about this. Have you heard this too?
Yes, and the state has put in additional reporting requirements, which make it very difficult for small communities. One of the things that we said was, look, to the State Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, we need some flexibility. You've got to help these communities be able to access these funds. And they said, well, we don't have the staff to be able to handle that. Well, in reality, they're taking $5 million out of the money that was dedicated for us to hire an independent contractor to run this program. And so the money is being spent to hire an outside agency to run the program, yet the state says they don't have the time or staff to be able to manage it. And in the meanwhile, communities are saying, it's not going to be worth it to us to try to comply with all these regulations, the shortened time period, and not be able to use it to the full extent of the law at the federal level. So forget it. And that means that's fewer dollars that are going to communities throughout northern, central, and southern Illinois.
And your organization says 87% of your communities that are a member of the Illinois Municipal League are facing revenue losses.
And they're going to have to come up with that money somewhere. As you and I have discussed before, You can only raise revenues or decrease expenses. Raising revenues is not going to happen in this time. Nobody's going to increase taxes. So that means programs and services are going to have to be cut, because money that was intended to be spent at the local level by the Congress is not getting to them. And that's a real problem. And it's happening all throughout the state of Illinois and across the country.
The senator said about 100 communities had put in applications. I don't think a single dollar has been disseminated. How many members do you have in the IML when you consider there's 100 communities have asked, but how many members do you have?
Well, there are 1,298 municipalities in the state of Illinois. This affects all of the municipalities outside of the Chicago five-county suburban area. So it's about 1,100 cities. And I was listening to Senator Durbin's interview with you, and I think he said 147 or something like that,
right?
Communities. Well, out of 1,100, that's not a very good response rate. And it's because the regulations are too strict, the compliance is too burdensome, the process is too difficult, the timeline is too short, and the restrictions are too high. And so communities are saying, forget about it.
All right, so those rules did not affect Chicago and the collar counties. There were two set of rules. That got a lot of different words to cover that description. But I found it interesting. The senator said they didn't have the ability to write individual checks to the counties and cities.
Yeah, and I want to be very clear that we have received a lot of support from both our House of Representatives, congressional members, and our two U.S. senators. And Senator Durbin is very aware of this issue, and he's talked with me about it multiple times. And I know that he's called the governor's office about it because of our interaction and because of your engagement with him. So I want to be clear that we do have awareness about this, and we are getting some support. We just can't get it changed at the state level. And to that point, your point that you just made, that it was too hard for the Congress to distribute the money directly to municipalities. There are about 19,000 municipalities across the country. Well, we know there are 300 million people in the United States. They were able to send checks to millions of individuals. People got their stimulus or whatever it was called, their direct payment from the Treasury months ago, went straight into their checking account, or they got a check. Millions of those went out, but yet the Treasury Department couldn't send out 19,000 to individual municipalities. And really, what we asked for, and we told this to the Treasury Department, was just mandate that the money has to be distributed directly to the cities. It can still pass through the state. They could have written 50 checks, because the state has a process to distribute funds to local governments. It's that LGDF process we talked about.
Right.
But instead, the states were allowed to tinker with it, toy with it, mess with it, complicate it, and obstruct it, and now municipalities are sitting here without the funds.
One of our listeners, the simple question, where will the undistributed money go?
Well, it will go back to the state, who can then spend it in accordance with the full federal guidelines. And I suppose if the state doesn't spend it, it'll go back to the federal government. But the state will have an opportunity to spend those dollars in accordance with the regulations that they are not allowing municipalities to spend it within.
Before I change subjects, which I want to move on because I've got another very important subject when it comes to money to follow up with. All right, what do you call this? When money is allocated by the federal government to a community, it is never distributed, the rules are changed in the process, and somebody else keeps the money. What is the definition of that? What is the word that you would use to describe this circumstance?
I don't know that I can say that on the radio, Tom.
Okay. All right, then. Okay, I'm coming up with a couple of words now. All right, so let's move on to another subject. What got my mind on this last week was our past relationship when you were Carbondale mayor, and it was the census time. I read an ABC website report from ABC News about coast-to-coast issues of distributing money via census and the problems that come along with a college town, and the colleges are seeing big problems, and you understand why. Maybe somebody's going to SIU, but they're living in O'Fallon because they're taking their lessons online, so mom and dad say, no, they live here for the census, and the number isn't counted where it should be, and that's Carbondale. You've been through this circumstance, and there's a myriad of problems in a good year.
Yeah, you've got that right, and going back to two censuses ago. So in 2010, of course, I was mayor. In 2000, I was on the city council in Carbondale. We had an undercount in 2000 where an entire census tract was taken out of the dormitory areas of the campus and put out into the bottoms of Jackson County that affected about 6,000 people being undercounted in Carbondale. So we filed a lawsuit against the state to enjoin them from basically using the wrong number for our revenue source. That went before Judge William Schwartz back in 2001. He upheld our decision. We were able to get the count fixed and the numbers assigned to where they were supposed to go, and Carbondale got its money. Then in 2010, you know, we had a very concerted effort to make sure everyone was counted, because knowing of what that experience was and making sure that our numbers were increasing and being counted accurately. Today, in the 2020 census, the national self-response rate today, as of Friday, is about 65, almost 66%. The Illinois self-response rate is 70%, which is obviously better than the national response rate, but we're talking about $1,500 per person annually that comes back to the state of Illinois and is distributed through the different communities and different services for every resident that's counted, $1,500 per capita. If you look at what Illinois receives annually, about $20 billion annually, if you just take 1% off of that, that's a $20 million annual reduction. You can apply that down to communities, specifically college towns, and we've seen this in Bloomington and Normal and Charleston and Carbondale and Macomb and DeKalb. These communities have those residents there on census day, but this year, because the universities were either quarantined or closed or have gone remote, that count didn't take place. And that's going to cause a big disruption to the count for those communities.
Now, here's the thing. I started playing with the numbers using an economic multiplier that's taught at the Berry College in which we speak. And I came up with figures that had financial ramifications over a 10-year period in the neighborhood of $23 million from Carbondale. And I did that with conservative numbers.
Well, if you look at what the last numbers I saw for Carbondale households that had responded directly, it was about 46%. That was a month ago.
Yeah.
So all you have to do is figure that half the people are getting counted. That means you're going to get half the money. And that is going to be painful to communities, not just Carbondale, but all throughout Southern Illinois and all throughout the state of Illinois. If they're undercounted, they will not receive those funds. And it's a real problem. And I mean, now is the time when it is so easy to go online to be able to count yourself. You can fill out that census form online, or you can go to 2020census.gov and you can get all the information. And by the way, you know, that count has to be reported, statutorily reported to the president and the Congress by the end of this year. So that's December 31st.
Yeah, they've given some extra time, for my understanding, for field workers when it comes to census. I thought a window had been open a little longer, but apparently that was just for census workers themselves.
Well, that's been extended through September 30th. So that non-response follow-up and the self-response had been extended, but that's through the end of this month. And then they've got to get all the information put together and reported to the president and the Congress.
All right. Now, let's see here. I received this message earlier this morning, and I don't know how involved you are, although I got to be honest with you, I did sit with a mutual friend of ours who we lost a couple of years back, Richard Moore.
Yep.
Who was a Carbondale fireman, and a good friend of mine for years, and just enjoyed Richard smart feller. And he was on the fire pension board that helped devise the pensions for firemen. So he gave me quite the education about how money could be invested, things along that line. It's interesting because a question came in this morning. Says, good morning. I hear that you're going to be interviewing Brad Cole this morning. I was hoping you could ask him about the newly formed fire pension board that hired three firms at $800 an hour, all from Chicago, a director who was hired at $250,000 a year, as well as an office that would be rented in Chicago. Why not Springfield? Why such high salaries and attorney fees? Thank you and have a great day. Can you answer any of those questions, Brad?
Yes. Now, I'm not speaking on behalf of the Firefighters Pension Investment Fund, so this is just my response to those questions. But as you know, we've been working on consolidating the investment funds for those 300 firefighter pension funds and 350 police pension funds so that we could capture higher returns to be able to generate more dollars to go into the funds to increase the funded ratios to meet the statutory requirements, which are to be 90% funded by the year 2040. Most of those funds are in the 50 to 60% funded range. So what the General Assembly did and the governor signed into law a year ago was to consolidate those just for investment purposes only. So what we've done, essentially, or what they've done, is taken those, four on the fire side, 300 different funds where they were spending millions of dollars because each individual fund had their own fund managers, fund attorneys, and investment advisors and everything else, consolidated that into one small organization with about a half a dozen people. I don't know about the rates that were that the questioner asked about. I don't have that information. But the reality is the duplication of service that is happening right now is going to be reduced significantly so that the costs will be lower and the investment returns higher to better fund those pensions.
All right, so $250,000 is a consolidated. I can see why somebody said, we're paying the guy $250,000. I hope he's worth it.
Well, and that's, of course, to manage a $6 billion fund.
Okay.
These are not individual funds that have a few million dollars in them. This is a comprehensive consolidated fund of $6 billion that will be able to generate hundreds of millions of dollars in investment returns, whereby these local funds are currently not generating that type of return, which is why they have an unfunded ratio.
All right, got to go back a little bit to answer the next question that has come in. You had talked about the cure money and its distribution. The state of Illinois had hired a firm to do that, which was news to me, by the way, and thanks. But this question is the company that Brad was talking about Deloitte? I don't know the answer. Do you?
It's a company called Crow, C-R-O-W-E.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
Deloitte is doing work for the state, but I don't know that they're involved with this.
Yeah, I think it was just IDES, I think, with Deloitte. To my knowledge, anyway. Well, we covered a lot of ground today. You still haven't come up with a word yet that we can use in broadcast when it comes to cure monies and not being distributed? Because this troubles me. I literally am losing sleep over this. You know I've been working this program in every conceivable way because I'm talking to the mayors and the city and the county commissioners, and they're deeply concerned about the gap of lost revenues. They need this help. You at one point said, you know, there are creative ways to try to do this by making sure that any monies that are spent for, like, PPE for the county come from this fund as opposed to others and keeping the records for that. But this has me concerned on an epic level when people say, hurry, hurry, we must do something, and then they do something and then nothing is done. I find this one of the most troubling things that I've come into contact in quite some time.
It's 6 months after the fact that the Congress acted, and the Congress acted within 6 weeks, which was light speed for them. I think the word is just simply unfortunate. I don't know of any municipal official that would set up the structure or program to operate the way the state has under these circumstances. In fact, I don't know anybody other than the state that would have set up the program this way.